is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. Today we have a very special guest that's going to talk to us about the future of healthcare. We speak a lot on the show about personal responsibility, about being able to take control and your power back in the system that seems to be trying to wrest it from us and centralize it and make it government-driven. We're living in a situation now that it seems to be happening faster. I'm not sure people have heard the news, but UnitedHealthcare is planning to remove itself from the affordable healthcare marketplace, which I'm not surprised. And there's a question whether that's going to be the beginning of further movements of other insurance companies out of the consumer-driven, well, I shouldn't even say that, the government-driven marketplace. And we're in a position now where all of us who knew this was never going to work are now having what we predicted starting to come to pass. Insurance companies are dropping. The hospitals have gotten fewer and far between. The healthcare costs have gone up. And my prediction was that this was going to be a movement towards single payer, create the chaos, and then the government would become the answer. But our show is all about finding an alternative and finding a path that's more viable, more patient-centered, more individual-centered, and that's why I wanted to have a special guest on today. We're speaking to someone from the Heartland Institute. I'm not sure people know what that is, but it's a 32-year-old national nonprofit research organization, and I love its mission. It was founded and dedicated to finding and promoting ideas that empower people. To me, that is what it's all about. And today we are going to have a conversation with Mr. Michael Hamilton. He is part and parcel to the Heartland Institute. He writes about healthcare issues, and we're going to pick his brain about where we go, where we are, and where we're going to go from here if we want to get out of this situation. Mr. Hamilton, thank you so much for joining me today.
Dr. George, thank you so much for having me. It is an honor to be with you and with your guest this morning.
Well, thank you, and same here. Look, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you end up in the Heartland Institute, and what's your background?
Sure. So I actually come from a teaching background. I taught for government and American literature for 6 years in a couple different places, first in Boston, Massachusetts, and then in Dayton, Ohio. And I've since gotten out of teaching, but I haven't been able to shake that teacher syndrome. So one of the promises I made to my wife and to my family was that I would continue to educate, even if not inside the classroom. And so I really was gravitating toward more of a public policy and politics kind of conversation and discussion. And so just by God's grace, the combination of paths really converged on the Heartland Institute. I was able to co-found a blog in Ohio, a political and policy commentary blog called Ohio Conservative Review, and that actually just opened up a career of editing. I was able to found a freelance writing and editing company, and that just really opened the platform for me to be able to help a lot of organizations. Many of them were not-for-profits who are writing about issues that I really care about, freedom. Freedom of how we spend our resources, our moral freedoms, what we're able to do under the First Amendment, and issues like that. And so those things converged then when the Heartland Institute had an opening to have somebody come in and to really shepherd their health care policy section. And I knew I had to do that. I had done some writing on healthcare policy, healthcare is the single most important domestic issue of our nation. And it is that way today, and it is going to be that way when my three children are my age. As we all know, it's part of the Leviathan government now that has just sent out its tentacles, and it's done this in the area of healthcare. And it's so interesting, Dr. George, that when we talk about healthcare, we're often not talking about healthcare. We're talking about just the issue of freedoms and basic liberties, because I do think that healthcare and government intrusion in the healthcare industry is already proving the vehicle by which the government will force itself into other aspects of our lives. So it's an important issue for me, and I'm really honored to be with you today and talking about this great issue and with the Heartland Institute.
Well, that's a great platform. I mean, it's all about teaching. Most people have an idea that something's wrong. They don't know what it is. And I'm not sure that people, either they're afraid to look or they don't know where to look. And that's why what you do is so important. And I wanted people to really get an idea of, in our conversation today, where they can go, what their opportunities, what their options are, instead of someone telling you, this is all you get, you should like it, and you have to do it. I mean, it's all about informed consent here. We're not getting it anymore. That's not even part of the healthcare process most of the time. And if you don't know what your individual freedoms and choices are, then you're going to be victimized by that. I'm going to ask you a pretty big question, but I want to get your take on it. I know what I think. How do you think we got to this point in the healthcare system where it used to be, you know, you walk into a doctor's office, what you did, what you said to each other was private. Nobody else stood in the middle of it. Nobody else had a game, a dog in the hunt in terms of monies or what you determined to be appropriate healthcare. How, in your opinion, how do we get from that to this where the government is sitting in the room with the doctor via the electronic medical record system, telling the doctor what to do?
Sure. Well, you're right. It is a big question, but it's an important one, and I'm happy to take a whack at it. I think that maybe the summary way to answer it is that intrusion leads to intrusion leads to intrusion. And by intrusion, I'm not simply talking about, you know, the government knocking down, you know, doors or getting into our medical records, but I should maybe clarify interference with the market. Because decisions that we made decades ago, they gradually created these pathways that we would then eventually walk down. And so that eventually now in 2016 we're looking around going, how in the world did we let our country and our lawmakers and our elected officials do this to us? You know, and a lot of times the answer lies farther back. I know that one popular answer to that I think is certainly a possibility is when we decided to exempt the portion of our income that we receive from employers that is from taxes, the portion that goes to paying for health care and paying for insurance, then I know that is, exemptions are great. I we need to be paying, you know, fewer taxes for sure. But at the same time, that was, I know, a moment where it carved out insurance dollars or health care dollars to go a different direction. And so a lot of people point to that as the seed that was not a big deal at the time, but then it really blossomed into something else. But when we look at some of you more recently, how did the Affordable Care Act happen? How did this get to the point of now being the incredibly expensive system that not only is costing money at the federal level, but is now cajoling and coaxing states then to take the bait of this. Of this enhanced Medicaid expansion spending, you know, like it's, you know, it billed as free money. How did we get to a point to believe that money can just be pulled out of some special Obamacare pot that's based in Washington, D.C.? I mean, we all know in one region of our brain that we are approaching a $20 trillion debt. That is what the next president of the United States, Republican or Democrat, will be inheriting on January 20th of 2017. And so we all know that's there. So then how can we then make the irrational decision to say, okay, let's have the government pay for between 90% and 100% of Medicaid expansion? It's nonsensical. And then when you look at the state level, then we're so lulled into thinking that, well, you know, states are only going to have to pay between 0 and 10% of the expansion costs. Well, when you look at the state budgets and you look at the fact that in every state that has expanded Medicaid, far, far more people have signed up for the program, which only illustrates not only that it's going to cost more, but that we are incapable of predicting what the market is going to do. We just lack that skill set as human beings and as magistrates, as people who govern. We're not able to predict better than the market can predict what supply and demand is going to be. When you add all that up, then you have us making a series of irrational decisions. And what I think the answer is, Dr. George, is to make a sustained full court press, such as many organizations that the Heartland Institute is. I know that you are. I know that Liberty is. I have your book in front of me, Big Medicine. It's an excellent readable book. I think that these approachable ways to take this very, very complex, intimidating field of policy healthcare policy and bringing it down in ways that we can communicate to average people, because average people really are, at the end of the day, like, they are the ones who are facing the consequences of the decisions that are being made by Washington and that are being made in state capitals across the U.S. And so I'm thankful for your work, for your book. It's really an excellent way to break it down. And that's what my personal mission is in managing, editing healthcare news for the Heartland Institute. It's to make healthcare policy not only free but clear.
I think you did an excellent job of an overview. I want to tease that apart a little more just to put into more patient-centered terms. You're right. Right now they're promising states, you know, you follow the money. States have been promised 100% government payment for their Medicaid expansion. And if they do drop, and they will drop that, I forget what the year is. It's coming soon to 90%. That means every state budget, which is already most of it in the red, are going to have to raise taxes on people. Or they're going to have to limit what services they offer. Something's going to give, and it's going to be on the patient's back and on the middle-class person's back. How many more taxes can they possibly actually collect from folks? I just heard the other day that they've collected the most taxes ever, yet we're still in a debt situation. Where's this money going? And it's like throwing it into a black hole. Nothing's ever going to be enough, and so it's a spiral. And ultimately, in terms of patient care, Medicaid is one of the worst delivery systems of patient care. That's why doctors have left it, especially private doctors. So now you're in a position where you have a doctor shortage, you have a financial shortage in the state budgets, you have the government mandating that you do X, Y, and Z. We're not even counting in the people who are coming into every state, new immigrants, legal and illegal, who are going to access the system and don't pay into it. So it's just it doesn't work. I mean,
you're exactly right, and I like your focus on putting that in patient-centered terms, because I think that ordinary people have really no trouble understanding that money comes from somewhere. Most of us are on budgets, some of us are on extremely tight budgets, and we know instinctively that if you're going to spend money in one category for which you've not budgeted, or maybe you have budgeted, but if for some reason, maybe on its face it sounds like a really, really good reason, you have to spend that money, more money than you had intended to, it doesn't matter. It doesn't change the fact that that money has to come from somewhere. And unfortunately, that comes from two different ways. There's those who, maybe the very people who aren't paying a lot of taxes, and so they might think that, well, you know, that's something the rich are going to have to worry about. It's something that maybe my kids are going to have to worry about when they strike it rich. But I'm kind of okay. Well, I would say that's really not true. I mean, look around at the different things that we enjoy. I mean, the poor in America are richer the poor in America are better off than the wealthy relatively in many other nations. And so that is a result of a system in which people have incentives to innovate, that you have people who have incentives to take risks, and people who have incentive to go out and do things in order to find the best solution, a non-government procured solution to creating products and to delivering services like healthcare services. And as we'll probably talk about, you know, at the state level and at the federal level, you do have barriers to entry, different restrictions upon that deter people from wanting to go ahead and take that risk and to go out there and to develop that market-based, consumer-focused solution. And as a result, not only are the rich paying more for bad service, but those who don't even pay taxes are not actually getting the benefit of the services that would have been created by the rich.
That's an excellent point. I mean, ultimately, you get what you pay for, and it's a system that it's a very weird system. It actually encourages people who want to take responsibility for themselves to not be able to do it. Ultimately, we're going to take a break in about half a second or half a minute or whatever, but just think about this. The government is starting to penalize any employer who wants to pay for the health care of their employees. How ridiculous does that mean? And that's just ridiculous. I can't even think of why the government would want to take away the ability of somebody to help themselves. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening
to Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
This is Daryl Pullis inviting you to listen to America's Homegrown Veggie Show right here every Saturday morning at 10 Eastern Time. Great guests, great tips, and valuable information about growing your own vegetables, fruits, and herbs.
Understanding health insurance is becoming more challenging. If you currently have insurance, you probably notice that it costs more to see your doctor. And if you're able to keep your doctor, it takes longer to get an appointment. The bad news is this trend is projected to continue. Your costs will likely continue to rise, while your healthcare choice and access will continue to fall. The good news is, Peachtree ENT Center has the answer to this problem. We believe in taking care of the whole patient, because healing is more than writing a prescription. We are committed to working with you, and we specialize in providing affordable care for patients without insurance, those who are underinsured, and those with high deductibles or catastrophic coverage, and we offer same-day appointments. You no longer have to choose between staying healthy and paying bills because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're having a very important conversation with Mr. Michael Hamilton. He's the managing editor of Healthcare News and a research fellow at the Heartland Institute. And, you know, I don't think you can divorce the economy from the healthcare system. I think they're integral or integrated with each other. A sixth of the economy is the healthcare system and the monies that are spent in it. And under the Affordable Care Act, it's been seized by the government and its cronies, its corporate bedfellows. And it doesn't work. It's done at the expense of all of us. And they're really doing a masterful job of playing us off against each other. Before the break, we were talking about people paying taxes and how much the rich pay, etc. Did you see the statistic that in California, 1%, the one percenters pay 45% of the taxes, and overall, 47% of all people in the United States don't pay any taxes?
I did see that, and it's that kind of inequality that is it's hard enough when it comes to our tax structure and the way in which our country raises revenue and states raise necessary revenue. What kills me is to see that double standard and applied to the healthcare industry, in which we have the government, the federal government, saying out of one side of its mouth, we really need to rush this delivery of the best kind of health care, of coverage to those in the country who need it most. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time taking actions that then deter people and companies who are able to then create new ways of delivering those services, those in the market who are actually the ones delivering the healthcare services, which you know, because the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, they're not the ones out actually plugging that need, right? They're trying to pull the strings in order to coax those in the market to go and plug those gaps. And mm-hmm. Unfortunately, doing that puppeteering does not actually help the very people that the government has passed the Affordable Care Act with the intention of serving. What we need to do is to see the government take a step back in order to allow the market to fill that vacuum. And when we do that, then we'll see what we've seen at different periods in our nation's history, where we've seen innovative methods of creating and of delivering healthcare services. And we've seen states right now, even under the the burdens that the Affordable Care Act has placed upon them and those restrictions, you still have brave statesmen in various states across the U.S. who are saying, you know what, we're not going to be stopped by that. We have to innovate. And they're going out and they are, and some of them at great political risk, they're going out there and they are developing these different ways to switch the perverse incentive structure that the Affordable Care Act thrust upon states and thrust upon individuals. And so that is really exciting to see at the state level these solutions coming out in which people are, they're asked to maybe chip in a few dollars, to have some skin in the game when it comes to receiving their Medicaid, or maybe they're asked to pick up a little copay, or maybe they're asked to go to work, or to at least to show an effort to work for not even 40 hours a week. You know, these are all solutions that just appeal to human nature, mm-hmm. and we know that people operate that way. That when you're going to get money because you work, then you'll actually go and do that. Or when you're going to get health care as part of your compensation, we know that people work that way because we used to operate that way in this country.
Personal responsibility is a good thing. You know, if you're handed something, you don't have a value for it. And then in this society, you just expect to be given it and you deserve it and you're owed it, which doesn't fly for any length of time. You know, which states, in your opinion, are doing things that are out of the box like you described? Who's doing a good job?
Sure. Did you say in the European Union?
No.
Did you say in the EU? Or?
No, in the United States. You said there were some states.
Okay, all right, great. I was going to say that might be a little out of my wheelhouse there, but no, I misheard you. I'm happy to talk about some states that are doing a great job so far. I'm actually really excited. In the forthcoming issue of Healthcare News, and we gave significant coverage to the state of Tennessee for two main reasons. Actually, I'm sorry, three reasons. Tennessee is a great model state. One thing I just mentioned, and that is TennCare. I should say the legislature is proposing to change the way in which they do TennCare, which is the state's Medicaid program. They are trying to pass a pilot program in which each person on Medicaid would have the option to opt in to this program, in which they would then receive on an electronic card, a certain number of dollars preloaded by the state that would go toward paying for health care. Now, the state would also be picking up the premiums for those people and just paying them directly to providers, the portion of Medicaid dollars that would go to that. But what giving the dollars on the card to the individual does is it suddenly empowers that patient to make the best, the most logical, the most rational decision as to the value of the healthcare services that they are going to be receiving with the dollars they spend. Because ordinarily, and this, by the way, is true for people who are making buku bucks and are not on Medicaid, they have their own insurance. Even those people, most people have no idea what the actual cost of the services that they are buying actually is, or what it should be. It doesn't even come up on their radar. They get the service, and then insurance takes care of it, and it's out of sight, mm-hmm. out of mind. So what the well-off are doing, who are ditching insurance, as well as what these Medicaid this pilot program recipients would be doing in Tennessee, is they would actually say, you know, I actually am going to look at the value of something. I'm going to make the value judgment as to whether this is actually something I want and need, and I'm going to make a smart financial decision with it. And you know what is so cool about that is that at the end of the year, then they will be able to keep the pocket that cash that they did not spend that had been loaded on the car. And so it's an incredible incentive right there for them to make smarter decisions. Tennessee is also doing some exciting things with something called with direct primary care, with which I know you're extremely familiar. Mm-hmm. And so direct primary care in Tennessee, they basically have clarified that it is not insurance. Which is kind of funny to think that it's a clarification that would need to be made, because it's just unrelated to insurance. But many states have laws in the books that would by default regulate direct primary care, which is just simply a private agreement between a doctor and a patient. to engage in this this monthly membership fee in exchange for a delivery of a number of preventative care services for every month or every few months. And so that's really exciting. That is just a terrific free market solution. And then the last thing, Dr. George, in Tennessee that we're watching with a great excitement is a pursuit of the state's repeal of its, reform of its Certificate of Need law. Mm-hmm. Essentially, Certificate of Need laws, con laws, require hospital operators, hospital builders to obtain special licenses from a state-operated board that will makes decisions to allow hospitals to add even a single bed, or to let a hospital expand, or to let a hospital undertake even like a renovation project if it wanted to upgrade its rooms and its hospitals, you'd think that you'd just be able to go out and do that in order to serve your patients. But unfortunately, anytime a hospital in Tennessee wants to undertake a small project like adding a bed or a larger construction project, then they need to go and prove that their hospital and their community desperately needs this particular kind of service. Now, I don't know about you, but I want my hospital to be making those improvements well before there's actually a need for them. I don't want the tiles falling off the ceiling and dropping on my bed in order just to persuade the state that, hey, maybe it's time for an upgrade. So innovators innovate, and people who have a incentive to improve and to upgrade, they go out and they do that well before improvements are needed, and that is the kind of culture that Tennessee is looking at bringing bringing into the state. The CON would remain on the books, but this would be a really big step forward for them.
Well, I think that would be an awesome thing to duplicate across the country. I can speak to the certificate of need part from a private physician standpoint. Here in Georgia, we used to have several freestanding surgery centers that we could take our patients to. We have a certificate of need law in our state, and the hospitals got together, they flexed their muscles, and they basically said, "We if we have competition, we put out of business." And they ended up stopping any more, building any more surgery centers in our state, freestanding. And then the hospitals proceeded to buy off the rest of the surgery centers. So we went from having dozens of places to go to basically none. And that means that the patient's out-of-pocket costs went up three or four times what they would have been had a freestanding surgery center been open. So again, it's a chilling effect on free market healthcare if the hospital is the only game in town. And of course, they have the big pockets to go and lobby and to stack the deck against private doctors. We don't have that kind of deep pocket. And the notion that they get, that they're losing money every time they see a person that's uninsured, they don't bother to tell people they get money from the government to do just that. And independent doctors don't. So this is a totally rigged system, uneven playing field, which they made more uneven by legislation. So I love that certificate of need being diluted or removed, because it's really just a way it's a barrier to competition. So my other question for you was with the EBT or whatever the card is that the folks in Tennessee have, can they use the Medicaid card to go to direct primary care doctors?
So that's a great question. I'd have to double check, but when I was reading through the legislation, then my memory was that they would really have, if not carte blanche, then something closer to it, that they would be able to use the card in a number of places, even places that are not traditionally in the Medicaid system. So that's my memory, but I can check on that for you.
Okay, I'd love to know more. Let's take a small break. We're listening to Medicine on Call.
Do you have problems with sinus pain and pressure? Do other people smell things that you don't? Have you lost the joy in eating because food just doesn't taste like it used to? Is your nose always stuffy, no matter what you do? Maybe you have sinus or nasal polyps. These are generally benign growths that occur from chronic sinus infection or allergies that are either undertreated or have not been treated at all. At Peachtree ENT Center, We specialize in minimally invasive balloon dilation sinus surgery and correction of a deviated nasal septum and turbinate reduction surgery that can be done in the office. We use the state-of-the-art equipment so that you can see the problem. You will be a partner in your care, and together we will decide the course of treatment. We believe in old-fashioned medicine, where we take the time to fix the problem, not just medicate the symptoms. You can rest assured that all options will be offered before surgery is recommended, because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, host of Detailing Addiction on America's Web Radio. Please join us at 4 p.m. on Tuesday afternoons.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're speaking with Mr. Michael Hamilton, Managing Editor of Healthcare News and a research fellow at the Heartland Institute. Now, Mr. Hamilton, I wanted to ask you a question about, you know, language. And it's kind of another broad statement or question, but I'm finding that language is becoming a weapon in our country. The labels that people get, I guess, plastered with, and what we're saying that we stand for, it's actually the opposite of what's going on. You know, when you talk about liberal versus libertarian versus conservative, the labels don't really jibe with what the actions are and what the mindset is. I mean, I guess I would consider myself a libertarian. I want people to live and let live. I want them to have the opportunity to practice and live God's gifts that they were given, instead of somebody telling them where they should be, how they should think. You know, this pigeonhole mentality where if you don't fit into this circle, then there's something wrong with you. So is that how, I mean, what's your take on the system? And we're talking about a liberal healthcare system where it's not liberal at all. They're trying to force vaccines. They're trying to force you to take medications you don't need. They're putting people in hospice and palliative care when they should be treating them. That's not choice. It's not liberal. It's very authoritarian.
I think that's a great point, Dr. George. You know, I remember when I was a freshman in college, I went to Hillsdale College in South Central Michigan, and at Hillsdale, they forced us to take two classes. I went willingly. I say forced it. They offered this, and it was just terrific. But a class on the Constitution, no matter what, every person who goes through there takes a class on the Constitution, and then people were encouraged to then consider this political economy class. I remember one of my first weeks there, then I learned that we were going to be studying classical liberalism as an economic policy, and I thought, oh, you got to be kidding me, mm-hmm. bunch of liberals. This isn't going to work. Mm-hmm. Only to find out that classical liberalism, all it really refers to is it uses the surface meaning, the actual meaning of those words. Liberal specifically, as in tied to liberty, as in free. Unfortunately, those who would identify and whom I would identify with liberal today, tend to stand for policies that on a very superficial level may sound conducive to increasing the freedom of ordinary Americans, but really when you break them down and you actually try to apply them, then practically it results in the removal of freedom for many Americans. And unfortunately, one of those the most insidious tricks of language that we AMC in that respect actually is in the name of the Affordable Care Act itself, and the longer name, which some people may have forgotten, the Patient Protection and, Protective and Affordable Care Act. Well, patients are not protected under it, and it's not affordable, as evidenced by the fact that UnitedHealth, I believe it is, announced yesterday or the day before that they're going to be dropping from almost all of the insurance exchanges. And you know, I think that, you know, look for this. Look for the spin of that, right, where it's somebody somewhere is already working on spinning that their language to make it sound like this big, nasty insurance company is looking to stick it to the government and stick it to the little man who can't afford insurance. And that's why they're backing out of participation in the in the federal exchanges and in the state exchanges. And the fact is that what we have here is the law that is predicated upon language that is borderline deceitful, because it is so unaffordable, is actually entering into what's known as a death spiral, where it's grown so expensive that insurers have to back out, which only makes it more difficult for the other insurers who remain to finance it and to offer their insurance to people, which means that you're going to have then more people backing out as they raise their premiums, and it just goes back and forth there until it collapses. Unfortunately, it's something as little as language can go a long way toward tricking us into thinking that it's like, oh, this is going to be a good idea, when in fact it can actually be a Trojan horse.
A Trojan horse for what? Single payer?
Yeah, it can be a Trojan horse for single payer. If I am correct, I think I might have read a chapter about that in your book, Big
you
Medicine.
Did.
I do think that that the current healthcare system is potentially a ramp, a conduit for ushering in single payer. I wrote an op-ed a little while back. I think it went to The Hill or somewhere, but it basically was that Hillary Care will terminate in single payer. Maybe not during her specific 4 or 8 year term if she gets that far, but that this kind of system that we're in applies the same kind of logic as a single player ultimately does. It's just a little bit further up on the sliding scale. But when you flesh these government controlled these centrally planned policies out, then the logical endpoint of all of them is to redistribute the wealth from the top down in the most comprehensive way, and that would be a single payer system, such as Bernie Sanders has advocated for. And it would be the advent of the single payer system that Hillary Clinton herself has said she doesn't want to see. And so that just shows, the irrational decisions here, that Mrs. Clinton does not want a single-payer system, so she says, but at the same time, the logic under which she's operating, which would essentially be Obamacare 2.0, has all of the seeds in place to grow into that single-payer system.
Absolutely. It's completely disingenuous, if you want to put it lightly, that she's against Obamacare or against single payer. Obamacare is Hillary Care light. It's just rolled out in a more deliberate and a slower manner, but it gets to the same point where you have a public-private partnership in healthcare, where the government is representing the public, sucking money from all of us and giving it to the private side, you know, the Medicare Advantage set. So, yeah, UnitedHealthcare may be stopping their play in the exchanges, but they're certainly not leaving the Medicare Advantage market or in the medical insurance industry. And ultimately, they're all going to get a bailout. If they play their cards right, they're going to be paid to make them. They already are being paid to be made whole for the patients who can't pay or the patients who are really ill. This is only going to be the government. They're going to be ministering what the government wants to the single payer. So they're going to get paid anyway as a contractor. That's ultimately my opinion where this is going to be going. And since there's a finite number of doctors, a finite number of hospitals, a finite number of resources, by definition, rationing it's already here, but it's coming with steroids. It's already happened to the seniors. I mean, think about what they did to them.
That is such a tragedy waiting to happen, and for some people it's not waiting, it's actually in effect, especially when we know that when people are empowered to make their own decisions about how they're going to pay for health care, and providers of health care are able to make their best decisions as to what is going to be the most cost-effective thing for them and to lead to more business and to more people wanting to come to them because they're serving patients really well. Mm-hmm. We know that when two parties, a provider, a supplier, and a buyer, in this case a patient, just an ordinary patient, ordinary American who needs health care, when they are free to make the decision that will most benefit them, then that flourishes into all kinds of exciting and effective and innovative delivery of healthcare services. And so we don't have to go about this as if it is some Orwellian sci-fi novel or some Shakespearean tragedy where we're just now stuck with what we have. With another system, a free market system, is actually possible. And you can look around the country, different places where that is trying to pop up through the cement that the Affordable Care Act has laid over top of it. And in some places it's breaking through. I hope that we can encourage it to break through as many places as there is an interest to. And I think that interest is widespread.
Well, I'm looking at the blog that you wrote on April 6th about direct primary care, helping patients and doctors and the system. So that's one of the options, in your opinion, it sounds like, that is a viable. It's already here. You don't have to wait for it to be created. You just have to find the doctor in your city that has a practice that's based in direct primary care. That seems to me something that people could actually make movements towards to help change this system.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. In fact, I'm really jealous that some states have multiple direct primary care practices, and they're scattered evenly throughout the state. To my knowledge, there's really only one direct primary care provider in Ohio, or at least near me. So that's something that I've put on my personal agenda radar for something that I might want to talk to my representatives about, my state representative and my state senator about why aren't we must have a policy in place that is somehow discouraging to direct primary care providers. Because you're exactly right, that would be a really great, that is a really great solution, where essentially you pay a monthly membership fee that, as I think our mutual acquaintance, Dr. Hal Schurz with Docs for Patient Care Foundation likes to say, the fee is less than the cost of a cell phone bill, a monthly cell phone bill. And in exchange for that, you get a suite of services that are, most of which are preventative care services that end up not just making you healthy, but keeping you healthy so that you need to see the doctor less anyway. People who even have insurance but have a deductible so high that they can't afford to go and use their insurance end up going to signing up for some direct primary care membership because the cost of their 12 months of their membership fees is often a fraction of what they would be paying for one incident that they'd have to go to the doctor for and pay for with insurance. So that is a really great solution, and we are so excited to be covering that in various states. I think I mentioned Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Virginia, I believe, just signed. The governor just signed direct primary care legislation. Wyoming has what, in many respects, is a model for clarifying that direct primary care is not and should not be regulated as insurance companies are, because it has nothing to do with insurance. Mm-hmm. And I think there are about 15 or 16 states now with laws on the books that recognize that direct primary care is the up-and-coming solution to empowering patients to be able to control their own health care costs.
I think the take-home point for patients before we take a break is that as soon as the government steps in with regulation, the costs go up, the bureaucracy goes up, the efficiency goes down, and the satisfaction of the person at the end point, the person delivering the service, whether that's the construction worker, the doctor, the patient, whoever it is actually doing the work, is the one that's holding the bag, and they're the least happy of everybody. And on that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
This is Daryl Pullis inviting you to listen to America's Homegrown Veggie Show right here every Saturday morning at 10 Eastern Time. Great guests, great tips, and valuable information about growing your own vegetables, fruits, and herbs.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Dr. George from Peachtree ENT Center. We've won patient care awards and have the highest patient recommendations because we believe in practicing medicine the old-fashioned way. Practicing good medicine is based in listening to the patient and making a care plan that is individual. The best medical care is given when there is a strong doctor-patient relationship built on mutual trust and respect. At Peachtree ENT Center, we believe in taking care of the whole patient because healing is more than writing a prescription. Whether you have problems hearing, have frequent throat or sinus infections, from the time you call our office and speak to a real person, you'll be treated as an individual and not as an ailment. During your visit, you will not be rushed and all your questions will be answered. When possible, natural treatments will be recommended to fix the problem. If surgery is recommended, cost-effective, minimally invasive treatment for snoring, sleep apnea, or sinus problems will be offered because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call, and we're back. You made a statement. I just want to go back to a while back about the Tennessee folks who get to run their own, control their own healthcare dollar. You just said a mouthful. That is how it should be. But under the Affordable Care Act, the Accountable Care Organization is the government version of what you described, where patients get to control the healthcare dollar, keep it at the end of the year if they're efficient about their monies, which should be patient-centered. What really happens now is the hospital system gets the money. They dole it out in services to their patients. The doctors and the hospital and any other ancillary member of their system gets paid at the end of the year based on what's left. But the pressure is different. The patient deciding whether they want to have a service or see a doctor is a more empowering thing for the patient than the hospital saying, we're going to deny you a CT, we're not going to do the surgery, you're going to go to hospice, and we're going to keep that money in our system. That means they denied you your freedom and your right for healthcare services. They got to decide versus you getting to decide. That's a huge difference that people really need to understand, that it makes a difference. It's not about healthcare. I personally think the Affordable Care Act was not written for health care. It was written for control. They want to control every aspect of our lives. They want to control every aspect of the health care dollar. And it's a data mining system. Everything that we put in our electronic chart is mined for metadata, for what our habits are, and it'll be used against us at some point. By using something the way you just described, where you have a direct relationship, an adult relationship with your physician, you decide how much it's going to cost with each other, you decide what services are given, that's empowering the patient. That's what healthcare should be, what it was, and what they're trying to take from us. Now, before the break, you talked about direct primary care. What about the Christian ministries? Are they a good option?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So everything you just said directly applies to both direct primary care and to this option that many people are not aware of, but the Affordable Care Act actually contains an exception for something called HCSMs, which stands for Healthcare Sharing Ministries. And basically, they both use the market principle that says that when the consumer, the patient, is empowered to make the best decision as to what the value point is between dollars and services, then you're going to have all boats rise. That's the rising tide that's going to float all the ships. And so it's going to benefit the patients for sure. It's going to benefit doctors and providers, and the whole system will benefit. Basically, the way it works, and I'm actually a member of one, and Liberty Health Share is one such organization. I'm a member of a different organization, but basically it's not insurance, but it functions with some similarities, but it's far, far less expensive. So my wife and I, for instance, we actually send a monthly gift. That technically, as far as the IRS is concerned, it's not insurance, it's not a donation, it's a personal gift. And we give a personal gift every month to other families that are within this healthcare sharing organization, and in order to help cover the cost of their medical expenses. And when my wife and I, or one of our three children, has a medical need, then we pay the first. It's something relatively small, as long as it doesn't happen, you know, terribly often. $300 of that, and then after that $300, other families, other members of this healthcare sharing ministry, then send us their checks. They send us their gifts, and there are something like between, I think, 30,000 or 40,000 different members involved in the particular organization that I'm involved in, mm-hmm. It was really, you know, essentially no risk of, well, what if somebody drops out of the system or something like that? There's, you know, among tens of thousands of people, then you're really not running any sort of a risk there as far as what if somebody were to drop out or somebody didn't pay their share. So it's really as a in my opinion, a very safe alternative and much, much more affordable alternative to insurance. And it is one in which every single person involved is self-pay. And so I am not part of a direct primary care practice. I would be if I could be. There's not one in my area. But that just means that when I go into a doctor, that I'm paying with cash right there. And a lot of times they are so happy not to have to bill an insurance company in order to get money. They can just have it from me right now, and I can get service right then, that they will lower the cost dramatically, even before I've asked them to. And so it's really amazing. We don't have to be trapped in the system of confusing healthcare with insurance. They're two different things. And my family gets great healthcare, and we don't mess with insurance, and that's because of healthcare sharing ministries.
Now, for the people out there who always ask me, okay, that's if you're healthy. What happens when you're sick and you have to go to the hospital? How does that fit for you? Are you still covered?
Sure. So the rules might vary from HCSM to HCSM, which is okay. That's what the market's for. And so if somebody doesn't like one of them, then they can shop around for a different one. Under my particular one, then they actually do regulate some pre-existing conditions, and so you have to be honest and upfront with them about what you have, and then they have a system in which they actually have a different column of care and of gift giving that is actually for those people. So for instance, if it was if we were to get pregnant now, then that pregnancy would be 100% covered. When we first joined this particular HCSM, then we were already 4 months pregnant, and so what we could get reimbursed for was actually limited under that. And so they were helpful in helping us figure out what our options were, some different payment options to figure out for how we're going to do that. And we ended up doing that ourselves, you know, with our own money and with some. Ended up buying an insurance plan that was not related to the exchanges. You know, we did that with our own cash, and we were happy to do that. We actually had the money to be able to do that because of all the money we were saving by joining the healthcare sharing ministry. So you have to shop around, but I mean, good consumers, smart consumers do shop around, and they get the best deal for their families.
That's the operative word: being a consumer and shopping and being aggressive about what's good for you. What's good for you is not good what's good for me, and that's what to me makes this whole healthcare debacle even much more painful. It's this one-size-fits-all mentality. If you have a disease, you should be able to take this medicine and get better at this time. If you don't, then something's wrong with your doctor. You know, there's no personal responsibility. It's all centralized, collective mentality. And there are winners and losers in this. And the winners always seem to be the interests, the corporate interests that are underpinning it, that are whispering in the ear of the government, telling them how important they are. The insurance companies don't provide a service. They deny services. And to me, that's the difference between that and a Christian sharing ministry, is there aren't any gatekeepers. Their whole purpose is to cover each other, is to make it easy for you to get health care, not to deny you, not to pocket the difference, not to make a profit. That mentality does not work with health care. It works for car insurance. It works for, I guess for me, the car insurance and life insurance are probably the only two things that really work the way they're designed to work. Everything else that makes a profit on someone else's pain is just, it's not moral, really, if you really think about it.
Well, I agree with you, and especially immoral because of the deceitful nature of it, where where people assume, and I think that companies encourage the thinking that, oh, well, this company is invested in me getting the best care that I need for the best value that I need, and that's not the motivation of the insurance companies and just a lot of people in the healthcare industry, the way our service is set up, where it's a business just like any other business, and unfortunately, people may think that they're motivated to help the consumer, but when you have this government intrusion, then it changes some of those incentives. And so the best thing to do, the businesses really do help the consumers when they are left not unregulated, but as free from unnecessary regulation and intrusion. And people are then able to then take advantage of their services and vote with their wallets. And if a service stinks, if a business doesn't serve somebody well, then the consumers make that choice and they let that company know. And that company either goes away, or they make the changes that they need, and then consumers love it. This is how our grocery shopping works. This is how when we buy cars. This is how when we buy clothes. We go to the best stores, the best providers that we can afford. And if they're lousy, then we leave them. It works for every other aspect, every other product that we purchase, and every service that we buy in our lives. And then for some reason, we think that healthcare is going to operate by some different principles, and it doesn't. When patients are empowered to make the best decision for their value for the services, then that is when you end up getting the best services, and you end up finding the best doctors and more of them.
I couldn't have said it better myself. What's the best way for my listeners to reach you and read your blog?
Oh, best thing that they can do is to visit news.heartland.org/health. news.heartland.org/health is the health section of the Heartlander online magazine, and that is where all of our articles for healthcare news go live before they're rounded up each month and sent to 7,300 state legislators in all 50 states, every legislator, plus federal law and policymakers. And so that's what I'd encourage them to do, news.heartland.org/health, and they can follow me on Twitter at Mike Hamilton OH.
Mike, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. I learned a lot. I know my listeners did too, and it's all about taking your power back, being empowered, not being a victim in this system. Thank you so much for your time. I look forward to having you on again.
Thank you so much, Dr. George. It was a great pleasure.
Have a great day.
Same to you.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.